You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen on LA Talk Radio, and you are officially on the couch. Welcome, everybody. As always, a fabulous show with a guest who I have had on quite a while ago, but is absolutely one of my favorites, and I'm so happy to have him on today again. Little tease for you there. May I also remind you that you're always free to call in live here on the air if you have any questions or comments about today's topic. The number here, 323-203-0815, live in Los Angeles, 323-203-0815. Would love to hear from you. Now, if you're shy, as I always say here, you don't want to get your voice on the air, a little shy, you can email me direct into the studio, right? That's Doc Michelle, D-O-C Michelle, at AOL.com. Doc Michelle at AOL.com. And I like it because they always say, "You've got mail." I know it's old school. It just makes me feel like someone's talking to me. He really cares. You've got mail. Okay, enough. I want to also thank our sponsors for today. Once again, I have the privilege of talking about one of my favorite sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by Glow Soulware. It's the clothing company that puts love and light in every stitch. Glow Soulware is high-quality sports and nice casual clothing with beautiful and powerful sacred geometrical designs. We call it Sacred G. Wear your vibration and lighten up. Check it out, glowsoulware.com. Thanks again to Glow Soulware for sponsoring the show today. We'll be telling you more information on how you can get a hold of some of the awesome clothing they have and really learn about the sacred geometry patterns that are on their clothing and what that means and how that's going to make you feel once you put those clothes on. Is it possible to heal ourselves with our thoughts alone? Alone without drugs or surgery? Well, according to my guest today, that it does happen a lot more often than we might expect. Can we really engineer our own cells? Can we control our physical destiny? And if so, can we program our genes in our brains to create or manifest future experiences inside or even outside our bodies? Well, you probably heard stories about documented cases, you know, of folks who've reversed cancer and heart disease and depression and other diseases by believing in a placebo. What's a placebo? Well, you know what it is. It refers to it's sort of a phenomenon in which some people experience some type of benefit after being given a placebo, which you've heard as described as a substance with no known medical effects. You know, like sterile water or saline solution or a sugar pill, right? So in short, a placebo is a fake treatment. But in some cases, it can produce a very real response and change in the body. Why? We're going to find out today and a lot more about how you can change your body and your environment. Can you really do that out there? You know, there's so many cool experiments and true studies that have been done. My author in his book mentions this study. It's really well known. A lot of people talked about it. In 1996, plastic surgeon, or he's actually an orthopedic surgeon. His name's Bruce Mosley. and he's one of Houston's leading experts in orthopedic sports medicine. He published a trial study, and he had 10 volunteers. All these guys, men, had served in the military, and they suffered from arthritis of the knee, basically. Really had bad knee trouble and pain all the time. And due to the severity of their conditions, many of these men had a noticeable limp, or they were walking with canes or needed some type of assistance to get around. I mean, they were in pain. These guys were suffering. For all of you out there who know about knee pain, you know what I'm talking about, right? So the study was designed to look at the arthroscopic surgery, which is a popular surgery. And it's where the doctor kind of scrapes and rinses the knee joint to remove any fragments of, you know, the cartilage, which is degenerated and, you know, caused to, you know, inflame, push on the nerve endings and make the pain, basically. And what happened to that is about 750,000 patients receive this surgery every year. And in Dr. Mosley's study, 2 of the 10 men were to be given the standard surgery. Okay, that's where he scrapes, which I just talked about. 3 of them were to receive a procedure called a lavage. It's just sort of releasing pressure in the knee joint. And 5 of the men would receive nothing, a fake surgery. So Dr. Mosley would kind of pretend like he was doing a surgery on them. He put them under anesthesia, these guys who were getting the fake surgery. So, he did the whole thing. He scrubbed up and he had his so-called anesthesiist, which who really was there. He put him under anesthesia and he said, okay, this is what we're going to do. And he said, we're going to perform the particular surgery where we repair your knee. So after the surgery, all 10 of the patients in the study reported greater mobility and less pain. In fact, the men who received the placebo, or actually the fake surgery, did just as well as those who'd received the other surgeries, which had been successful in treating the arthritis in the knee. There was no difference in the results, even 6 months later and 6 years later, when 2 of the men who'd received the placebo surgery were interviewed. They reported that they were still walking normally 6 years later. They're walking normally without pain. They have greater range of motion. They're doing so much better, these guys. I mean, you know, this is the proof. This is the proof. And this is what I'm talking about. You know, I mean, it's just amazing when you read all of these surgeries and you read all of these treatments that are taking place. You know, it's mind-boggling. So what we're going to be talking about today is the placebo effect. And we're talking about the power of our minds. So my special guest today is Dr. Joe Dispenza. He says, of course it's true that with every thought we think, emotion that we feel, and every event that we experience, we can act as an engineer of our own cells. Can we control our physical destiny? Can we? We're talking about his latest book. It's called You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Matter. And we're going to talk about how amazing his studies delve into this. You probably know him as one of the scientists, researchers, and teachers featured in the award-winning film, What the Bleep Do We Know? You remember him, Dr. Joe, all the wonderful things he said about the power of the mind. He is a scientist. He's lectured on 6 continents, 27 different countries, educating people about the functions of the human brain. And we are going to be talking about his new book, You Are the Placebo. By the way, Dr. Dispenza is also the best-selling author of a couple of great books. I've already read them. They're terrific. I know you guys have, too, because if you've been my listeners for a while, you have read these books because I've talked about them. Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself and Evolve Your Brain. And Dr. Dispenza studied biochemistry at Rutgers University. He holds a degree with an emphasis in neuroscience. He earned his Doctor of Chiropractic from Life University in Atlanta, Georgia, and has received doctoral training in neurology, neuroscience, brain function, and chemistry, cellular biology, memory formation, aging, and the list goes on and on. And we have him on the line with us right now. Hi, Dr. Joe Dispenza. How are you today?
Very good. Happy to be with you, Dr. Michelle.
It's so nice to have you. You're You're an amazing researcher, and I appreciate so much what you do for folks out there in all the books you've written.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, really. And I think you're going to be getting a lot of positive responses and a lot of readers after today's show. So let's just jump right into it and you know, give folks a little bit of information about your book, You Are the Placebo. And what is the placebo effect to you?
Well, if you think about it, I mean, if you give someone a sugar pill or a saline injection or some sham surgery or procedure, and they're told that they're given the exact proper substance or procedure, a certain percentage of those people accept, believe, and surrender without analysis to the thought that they are going to get well from some external source.
Right.
Now, if you break that down, what's really happening is that they're believing in something outside of them to change something inside of them. And because thought is that powerful, for the most part, they're being healed by thought alone.
Mm.
So if you begin to examine the physiology and the scientific mechanisms, Michelle, of what's created the change from the placebo response, is it possible to teach people how to do it? In other words, do you need the sugar pill or the saline injection or the fake procedure, or can you teach them how to change their state of being and begin to produce the same effects so that they become their own placebo? So the placebo means to please, and over the course of history, it was a way for people to begin to change their well-being by some state of mind.
Right. That's, you know, it's so true. And in your book, by the way, you talk about so many stories. That's what I also love, is because you have real-life stories about the power of our minds and how people have actually healed themselves by just believing either in a placebo, or they were, like you said, the placebo, that they were going to get better and heal themselves. And I at the top of the show, I was talking about Dr. Bruce Mosley's research on the arthritic knee patients and how the surgeries that he faked, the guys were walking and doing all their activities 6 years later saying they feel fine, but they didn't have any surgery. So,
but think about this. I mean, here's the beauty behind that, Dr. Michelle, is that it was a conditioning process that allowed them to heal. In other words, it was the competence level of the doctor, and his enthusiasm was the wheeling him into the operating room, and it was their belief about surgery and medicine.
Mm.
And a certain percentage of the people got the actual surgery, where they actually removed the dangerous degenerative cartilage. Certain people had a lavage where they just had it washed, and then a certain percentage of people just got a nick on their knee. They just got the fake surgery. And those people had return of the range of motion and no pain in their leg and their knees that lasted from 2 to 6 years later. Now, they couldn't consciously do that. In other words, they couldn't say, I'm going to make my knee pain go away or change my range of motion or I'm going to take my pain away. They couldn't consciously do that. There was some element where they began to accept the thought that began to program their autonomic nervous system. And it was their autonomic nervous system that began to create the own blend of chemicals and pharmaceuticals that began to match the very surgery that they had. And that's exactly how the placebo works. We make our own pharmacy of chemicals that begin to match the very procedure or external substance. And that's how powerful we are.
Wow. We sure are powerful. And this is not, by the way, and I talk about this a lot, this is not a new agey thing. You know, it's about our mind. We're manifesting. And the concepts of the placebo effect have been around for a long time. And you talk about studies that go far back as 1770 in your book, Are You the Placebo? Can you just elaborate on a few of those stories?
Sure, and it's gone back before then, but Franz Anton Mesmer was really the first guy that made his mark when he was working with the model of miraculous healings. And what he really did was he was asking a patient to look deeply into his eyes, and he started to move magnets all over their bodies to direct and balance some type of magnetic flow.
Mm-hmm.
And after a period of time, he was able to wave his hands over it. and produce the same effects. And so there must have been some level of suggestibility. In other words, the person was able to move into a trance-like state. Mm. And when you become more trance-like, the amazing thing that happens is your level of suggestibility goes up, because as your suggestibility goes up, in trance, your analytical facilities go down. Now, what separates your conscious mind from your subconscious mind is your analytical mind. So if you're able to stifle the analytical mind, for the most part, you begin to access deeper levels of programming. So Mesmer began the process, and then a Scottish surgeon, James Braid, came along, and he was also noticing that he was able to produce a similar effect. Really, what he was saying is he was using some type of hypnosis,
right?
And he was able to fatigue certain parts of the brain by a person once again trancing into a flame. And he noticed one of his patients that were waiting for him in an altered state. And so that is a very strong key, that when people go into states of trance, or into what we call in brain science alpha brainwave patterns, the moment they change their brainwaves from beta, which is believing your outer world is more real than your inner world, to silencing the thinking brain, and all of a sudden your brainwaves slow down and the inner world, the imaginary world, starts to become more real. And that's when you're able to begin to reprogram that autonomic nervous system. So it was a little bit of charlatanism, and there was probably some aspect of drama involved. But the point is that they were producing very significant changes in people all over Europe. And so even the University of Nancy began to study it, because they were seeing that they were producing some really strong changes.
And this is not placebo per se. I mean, this is real. We're going into different brain stages, the alpha, and then the next level. What's that? The theta. If you can get into the theta, man, you're really suggestible, aren't you?
Well, in theta, really, the state of theta is a very interesting state, because that's the state where your body's asleep and your mind is awake. And when your body's asleep, and if most of our conditioning has been a program in which the body's become the mind, the moment the body's asleep, it's no longer the mind, so there's no longer any resistance. Programs are pretty much totally accessible, and that's when instantaneous change can occur.
Wow, isn't that great? Just, it's such wonderful scientific information you have in your book as well, which we're going to be talking about. And by the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and my special guest today, Dr. Joe Dispenza, is the best-selling author of Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, Evolve Your Brain. We've talked about those books before. And his very latest is called You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Matter. And we're going to talk about where you can get that book. And it's coming out a couple of days, Dr. Joe?
Yes, it's coming out Monday, the 29th, and that's its release date. But I think a lot of people have been pre-ordering, and there's some free downloads that go along with the pre-order. So 29th is the day they're releasing them from Amazon.
Great. Great, great. And we'll get more information, too, about your website and where folks can find out more about you and your workshops and your other books and all of the great things that you're doing to help people out and become more powerful in their lives as well. So we talked about what's going on when the placebo effect is operating. Aren't we sort of hardwired to be the same way for the rest of our lives? I mean, this is what people think, right? I talk to patients every day, and they say, oh, my dad, you know, was predisposed to depression, and my grandmother had bipolar disorder, and here I go. Yep, I've got all of them,
right.
You know. So what's that about?
Well, you know, if you believe that, I think then it's true, because beliefs really begin to define who you are. It changes your state of being, but the latest research in this concept called neuroplasticity tells us that we're not hardwired to be a certain way for the rest of our lives. And the new research in epigenetics shows that we're not doomed by our genes, that we're actually marvels of adaptability and change. Now, think about this. I mean, we think 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts in one day. Mm. Out of those 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts that we think in one day, 90% of those thoughts are the same thoughts as the day before. So the same thoughts will always lead to the same choices. Mm-hmm. The same choices will always lead to the same behaviors.
Yeah.
The same behaviors will create the same experiences, and the same experiences will produce the same feelings and the same emotions. And those same emotions will drive our very thoughts, and that's called a personality. So our biology, our neurocircuitry, our chemistry, our hormonal expression, and even our genetic expression is equal to how we think, act, and feel. So nerve cells that fire together lie together.
Right.
If you keep thinking the same way and behaving the same way and creating the same experiences, you begin to stamp the same networks of neurons to fire in the same way, and they begin to become more refined as a network with stronger connections and more thicker circuitry. But you have to agree, then, that new thoughts, then, should lead to new choices, and new choices should lead to new behaviors. New behaviors can create new experiences, and new experiences will produce new emotions, and your neurocircuitry will change, and so will your genetic expression. So I think we reach a point in our life, you know, by the time we're 35 or 40 years old, where we become fixed into a certain state, and that's when the program begins to take over. So the idea of changing that requires information, it requires knowledge, because every time you learn something new, you make new connections in your brain. You forge new circuitry. So now you have more raw materials for you to think in new ways. And so when you stop learning and you start feeling and you use feelings as a barometer, the change in your life, we'll typically always talk ourselves out of change because change feels uncomfortable.
Sure.
So that becomes the paradox. But yet, you will usually wait for a crisis or trauma or disease or diagnosis or loss to really finally change. And I think my message is, why wait? You know, you can learn and change in a state of pain and suffering, or you can learn and change in a state of joy and inspiration. And I think people are waking up to the idea now that they don't have to be a certain way for the rest of their lives. The problem is that we're raised by the very people in our lives that we have the same genetic propensities towards. So when we observe them and we relate with them, that because of mirror neurons, we begin to take on some of their traits and characteristics. But there's no gene for alcoholism, and there's no gene for leadership. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. We select and instruct certain genes based on the experiences that we create in our environment. And if you're not creating anything new, well, then now we're headed for our genetic destiny.
Mm-hmm. So genetics are real, of course, but we can change that, is what you're saying. We can be predisposed to certain genetic disorders. Well, that's what doctors are all about. And I want to also point out that you, Dr. Joe Dispenza, are not negating the power of the medical community or surgeries or medicines or anything. But on the other hand, you are saying that our minds are so much more powerful and can create much better health and change our DNA.
Absolutely. Mm. And you know, my thought about that, Dr. Michelle, is really simple, is that I have a lot of respect for the medical model. I have a lot of respect for medicine. I have a lot of respect for physicians and healthcare providers. And I think that for acute care, we have a great system for acute care. But when we're talking about chronic conditions, there is no magic pill for a chronic condition, because chronic conditions require a change in lifestyle. It means you shouldn't be making the same choices every day. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are making the same choices every day, then you need to medicate in a certain way to change your chemistry. Mm-hmm. But if you're really crossing that river of change and you really, really want to make significant changes in your life, then you have to begin to make different choices, and you have to begin to make more choices that are going to support your health and well-being. So I by no means tell people to not see their doctor. As a matter of fact, I'm a pragmatist.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to get measured.
Yes.
But then after they get measured, I want them to look at the elements of their beliefs and their mind and their emotional addictions and emotional states that keep them returning back to the same self. Because if you understand the new science, then your genes are a library of potentials or parts list of possibility, and that we're our own genetic engineers.
Yes.
Well, then it's time really then to begin to make some significant changes and to see by you making those changes if you can produce some relative changes in your health and measure those changes.
Yeah.
And if it's not working, add to it, subtract to it, continue the journey called health.
Wow, that's so true, and I so agree with you. Okay, so here's the deal. I mean, you're a doctor of, you have a neurology, neuroscience, brain function, chemistry, cellular biology training, on and on. So what's up with these people who come into this existence here and just have these amazing, positive, loving, wonderful personalities from when they are children? I mean, where does that come from? Is there some kind of a personality that is within us that is not cellular, biological? this is just kind of something that I've always believed in, is there's something else. There's something else special about this kind of personality that's just loving and kind and warm, and these little souls that come in here and just blow people away. Where does that come from, do you think?
Well, I think it's a dance, really, between our spiritual soul aspect of ourselves that's inhabiting physical matter, inhabiting a body. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's a level of self-awareness and self-regulation that really allows us to be outstanding. And, you know, I'm in a research symposium this weekend, and we're creating a whole new idea about compassion and forgiveness and citizenship and integrity, and what that all means. And really, the bottom line is that we worship people that do the supernatural, but how do you do the supernatural? Well, you have to begin to do what's unnatural.
Yes.
You have to begin to give when everybody else is in lack and in poverty. Mm-hmm. You have to begin to show courage and strength when everybody else is in fear.
Yes.
You have to lead with compassion when everybody else is in chaos. You know, that's the model. You have to actually do what's unnatural enough times until you begin to become supernatural. And so the people that come in a certain level of awareness and certain level of knowing, they either had some great parents, primarily a great mother, I always say, and or that they just have a level of soulful development that allows them to no longer be seduced by the commonality and conditioning in the world. They're seeing the world through a different lens.
That's a beautiful answer, and I agree with you totally. I think there is that type of person, and I think through the soul development, I mean, that's the way they've come, you know, on this plane. Okay, don't give me any calls, guys. No nasty texts. I don't want to hear it. I am all about manifestation, guys. You know that. So, by the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle Cohen. That's me. My special guest today is Dr. Joe Dispenza. He is, of course, one of the best-selling authors around. He wrote the Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, Evolve Your Brain. And, of course, he's featured in the film What the Bleep Do We Know? You've seen him before. He's lectured on 6 continents, 27 different countries, educating people about the functions of the human brain. And today we're talking about his latest book. Awesome. It's called You Are the Placebo. If you want to learn a lot about your brain, folks, this is also the book to read, because it'll tell you exactly what's going on in your mind and your brain and chemistry and how you can change that chemistry physiologically with your thoughts, you know. So let's jump into it, Dr. Joe. You say that if we continue to utilize what you call mental rehearsal, that our brains will begin to physically change. We sort of install those new neurological circuitries. So how does this work, and how do we practice? I want to know now. I want to do it.
Well, let's create a model, because I think it'll be really helpful for people if you think about it. According to neuroscience, your brain is a reflection of your external environment. Okay. It is an artifact of the past. It is a record of all the experiences and knowledge that you've learned throughout your lifetime, and all of that information is etched neurologically in your brain. So your brain is a record of the past.
Mm-hmm.
So then mental rehearsal, simple example, if you take a group of people that never played the piano before and you teach them one-handed finger exercises, scales and chords, and they practice 2 hours a day for 5 days, and you do a functional scan of their brain before and a functional scan of their brain after. At the end of 5 days, they grow new circuits in their brain. Well, that makes sense. You learn new things. You make new connections. You have experience. Experience enriches your brain. You pay attention to what you do, and you keep repeating it. Then you actually grow new circuits in your brain. Well, if you take another group of people and you have them rehearse mentally in their mind, those scales and chords, at the end of 5 days, they have the same biological changes to look like they have been practicing the piano for the last 5 days, look like they have the experience already, but they never lifted their fingers. Now, what does that mean? It means now their brain is no longer a record of the past. It is now, in fact, a map to the future, because they're installing circuitry, installing the neurological networks in their brain, the hardware mechanisms, to look like the event has occurred. So if you're planning a speech, or if you're thinking about learning how to dance, or if you're thinking about playing an instrument, I was just talking to one of my kids about this. The more you rehearse mentally, your brain doesn't know the difference between the actual experience in your life and what you're doing in your inner world if you're truly focused. So we use mental rehearsal as a way for people to change their neurological structures in their brain. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that mental rehearsal also changes the body. In other words, people who actually exercise their fingers for an hour a day for 4 weeks, in the 4 weeks, they have a 30% increase in muscle strength. Yes. The person who mentally rehearses pulling that spring or exercising their finger and says to themselves, harder, stronger, harder.
Yes.
At the end of 4 weeks, they have a 22% increase in muscle strength. Now their body is physically changed to look like they have been exercising or pulling that spring for the last 4 weeks. Now, when the brain and body are physically changed, there's physical evidence to look like the event has happened. On a more probable than not basis, you are actually connected to a future reality. In other words, you're more prone to get your behaviors to match your intentions. You're more prone to get your actions equal to your thoughts. You're more prone to get your mind and body working together to walk into a new experience. And so we use that principle because people begin to, when they begin to plan and begin to rehearse in their mind who they're going to be in their future, they're literally experiencing that future reality in the present moment, and they're changing their neurocircuitry and even changing their genetic expression. And that's what got me writing this book, because we started seeing in our workshops people healing themselves of MS, of people healing themselves of lupus, of Hashimoto's syndrome, of celiac disease, of food allergies, of chronic pain, all kinds of conditions right during our events. So that made me wonder, something's happening in real time, and we should start measuring this. So that's when we started to realize that the placebo could actually be taught, and not only taught, but it could become a skill. And if you can learn how to do it, you can begin to turn the battleship around.
What about some of those people who would argue that it's, quote, difficult for them because they're basing a lot of their pain and their emotional suffering on reality, and that they just can't believe it. See, they can't image it because they can't believe it. Is there a way of just sort of slowly segueing an image into a belief for them?
Well, I mean, what's a belief but a thought you keep thinking over and over again until you hardwire it in your brain? Okay. Beliefs are based on past experiences, so if you keep experiencing the same reality, and the emotions that go along with it, then you believe that that's your reality. And a belief, then, the boundaries of our beliefs are called our feelings. Yes. So if how you think and how you feel creates a state of being, and if you keep thinking and feeling the same way, you condition your body to become the mind. And once the body becomes the mind, that's called a habit. It's a subconscious state of being. So most beliefs for people are unconscious states of being. They don't know that they're not conscious of the fact that they have a limited perception about money or spirituality, about God or about relationships, because it's all based on their past experiences. Mm-hmm. So in order to change a belief or a perception about yourself and your life, you have to make a decision with such firm intention that the amplitude of that decision carries a level of energy that's greater than the hardwired programs in your brain and the emotional addictions in your body. And your body should respond to a new mind. In other words, the choice that you make becomes an experience that you never forget. And that means that in order to change a belief, we have to come out of our resting state. So it requires then a level of self-awareness that we have to become conscious that we're unconscious.
Yes.
And that when you start giving people enough sound information, and you begin to break down the idea of what emotions are and how we've lived our life, and people can see that more clearly, all of a sudden they're no longer seeing their life through the same lens of the past. They start to see possibility. And when they start to see possibility, that's when they start to get inspired that it's possible. So it takes a little bit of knowledge and information and self-awareness and really a good understanding of our human nature. Because once we understand our human nature and we're all the same, then we can begin to make different choices.
Oh, my goodness, yes. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with me, Michelle, and my special guest, Dr. Joe Dispenza. We're talking about his latest book today. It's You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Matter. You can order it right now on Amazon.com. And, of course, it's going to be out Monday if you want to go into the bookstores and buy it. It'll be available. But get it now. Order it because it is wonderful. It's going to help you understand how you can control and really take care of yourself health-wise, mentally healthy-wise, and just get to know how powerful you really are. And, you know, Dr. Joe, we were talking about the importance of our subconscious or unconscious. What really, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but 95% of how we operate, what you were just talking about, comes from our subconscious, our survival, our, you know, getting information and just storing it in there. And then we have the little 5% that we're operating on a conscious level. So in terms of psychological states, you talk about how early childhood experiences become subconscious states. So how does that sort of affect us the rest of our lives?
Well, I mean, it's a good question because we have to talk about brain waves in order to explain it. And most children between the ages of 2 and 6 years old, they're pretty much walking around in a trance. If you were to measure their brainwave patterns, from the ages of 0 to 2, they're for the most part in delta, which is kind of deep sleep. That's why a newborn can't stay awake for more than 5 minutes at a time.
Wow.
But between the ages of 2 and 6, brain waves begin to pick up into theta. And when you're in theta, when you're in delta, and even between the ages of 6 and 12, when the child is formulating their analytical mind, mm-hmm. that period, the first 6, 7, 8 years, mm-hmm. their brain waves are still in alpha, and alpha and theta and delta is a representation of the subconscious. So when you're in those brainwave patterns, you're accessing subconscious. So a child, for the most part, for the first 6 to 7 or 8 years of their life, they're completely in their subconscious. And all the information that they're experiencing is going in unencoded. Mm. Because in those states, the inner world is more real than the outer world. They're paying attention to their internal states more than they're paying attention to their external reality. Wow. And they feel differently, they wake up and they pay attention to whoever or whatever caused it, and that begins to form memories that become part of their habits and their behaviors. So so that information then begins to become the very foundations of our personality. So it's an interesting concept because most people then are in those formative years, the developmental years. You can understand if they're loved and nurtured and if they're provided an environment where they can learn and grow, then the very foundation of who they are is based on a high level of self-esteem. But if they've had some abuse and some trauma and they've had some difficulties and they can't make sense of what all that meant, then they have some unconscious or subconscious programs that sooner or later are going to show up in their life again when they're confronted by the same conditions in their life that produce the same emotions. Mm-hmm. They regress back to that age and they use those very limited behaviors in order to function. So it's cool because when you start putting in the meditative model or the contemplative model, then people begin to are able to change those emotional states subconsciously, and then they're able to change their behaviors and change their states of being.
Wow, that is amazing! And just like the old school, the crack in the cosmic egg, you know, all the studies on the Geller children and all the if we bring these concepts that you are sharing about the fact that we are the placebo and the power of our mind to these kids so early. If we can do this to the kids who are ready to take it in and bring it up to the surface when they become adults and actually in a beta stage, they'll be good to go.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's interesting because a lot of people don't even know that they don't even know that that's happening because it's pretty much their propensities and drives that are happening behind the scenes of their awareness until they have to execute competence and control in their life. And all of a sudden, you know, they're facing some difficulties because they never really had the foundation. Now, that doesn't mean it's the end, because we've had plenty of people in our work who've had some rough past, really overcome their past to such a degree that they're literally a different person. So we're not defined by our past. We just have to understand the emotional states and not the event. The event really doesn't matter. What matters is overcoming that emotional state, because a memory without the emotional charge is called wisdom, and that's the name of the game here.
Mm. I love that. That's really terrific. You talked about, you know, changing our beliefs and just sort of what did we call it? Changing the circuitry in our brains with mental rehearsal. What are some of the other techniques? And I don't want to give this away because I really do want folks to pick up your book and really get into this so they can learn how to change their lives. But what are some of the other techniques we can use to create some new internal experiences that are stronger than our past that we were just talking about and our environment going on where we say, just my luck, that's negative.
Yes. Well, the simplest way to describe this, and we've seen this in the research that we've done in our own, you know, with our own brain scans and heart rate variability and some of the other measurements we've taken on hundreds and hundreds of people, is that when you marry a clear intention, an intention is just having a vision of what you want, it's getting clear on what you want. When you marry a clear intention, which is a mindful process, with an elevated emotion like gratitude or joy or inspiration, a heartfelt emotion. Mm. It is the combination of those two things that begin to instruct and change matter. So thoughts are the language of the brain, feelings are the language of the body, and when you change how you think and feel with a clear intention and elevated emotion, your body as the unconscious mind does not know the difference between the actual experience and that's creating the emotion that you're fabricating by thought alone. Mm. And your brain and body are getting a taste of the future. So when you begin to create something in your life, truly create something in your life, if you've done it properly, you should get up from your meditation or your contemplative practice or your inner work feeling differently than when you sat down.
Yes.
And if you do, then something's changed.
Yes.
And that means then it's your job to maintain that modified state of mind and body your entire day. And if you can, get ready, because something unusual is going to happen in your life. That's the law. So it's not enough just to move into a meditative state and then get up and get on the freeway and flip people off or judge your coworker.
Right.
You've fallen from grace.
Yeah.
You went back to the old self.
Yeah.
So the challenge then is to be greater than the conditions in your environment, to be greater than the habituations and addictions emotionally in your body, and to do it for an extended period of time. That's when you're actually in the process of change. So clear intention, elevated emotion is the combination of moving into the new states of being. A new state of being is a new personality, and a new personality is what creates a new personal reality.
Mm. Beautifully said. And I, you know, I don't mean to keep relating back to it, but you blew me away in many of your segments in the film What the Bleep Do We Know. And you said exactly what you just sort of shared with listeners about each morning, right? How you get up and sort of create your day, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're always creating our day. It's just whether you're creating the same day or a new day. That's the question.
There you go.
Because if you're waking up in the morning and you're mentally rehearsing, you have to take the dog out and then you want to drink coffee out of your favorite mug and then you got to take a shower and then you wash yourself in the same routine way and then you think about the meetings you have and you think about the things you have to do and the grocery shopping you have to do. Well, you're priming your brain for a very known, predictable future. And if you're thinking about the emotions that accompany it, like I dread this meeting and I dread doing that, whatever it is, then your past is your future and your future is your past. So sitting down and finding the sweet spot of the present moment and just finding a place and changing our state of being and then beginning to interact with an invisible field of intelligence, you can call it the quantum field or whatever, and then begin to observe a new future and begin to repeatedly remind yourself of who you're no longer going to be that keeps you connected to your old self and who you're going to be as your future self. If you're able to do that enough times and move into a new state of being and then begin to create something in your future, you become a scientist in your life. In other words, there should be some external change from your internal process. And when people begin to correlate the feedback or the external changes or the events that are taking place in their external world from their internal changes, they pay attention to what they did to create them, and they keep doing it. That's called human empowerment. And the beauty behind that is no one is excluded from the equation. Mm-hmm. Everybody, independent of their race or gender or creed or their culture, their social status, their intellectual ability, everybody has the ability to do this.
Mm, that's beautiful. So the more we use your tools which people can read about in your book. And the more we meditate, the more we change our thought process, basically, and then see the results within our body. Our body's changing. We're getting better. We're getting healthier. We're getting or feeling younger, whatever we want to produce change in, or even outside our lives. We want to change our careers. We want to become more abundant or whatever. And the more we see it and feel it in the external experience and environment, the more it reinforces in our mind that we actually are doing it and can do it. And then, of course, we're rewiring ourselves, and then we're refiring ourselves in our brains. Yeah, right.
Well, you know, look, this is an amazing conversation because, I mean, if you see someone dance the salsa, you'll dance the salsa better. If you see someone hit a tennis ball like Serena Williams really well, you'll hit a tennis ball better. If you see someone leading their life with compassion, you're more prone to leading your life with compassion. And if you see someone heal themselves of a disease or a condition or create the life that they want, and they stand on a stage or they tell a story about who they were and what they had to do to change themselves to get to a new state. And if you really embrace that, you're more prone to accept, believe, and surrender that it's possible for you. So I think there's a great time in history where people just don't want to know. They want to know how. They want to know how to do it. And they want to see the evidence of people who actually do it. And if they can see people that it's actually doing it, it's like the 4-minute mile.
Yes.
More and more of us will begin to make those changes from the inside instead of from the outside.
Mm, beautifully put. We're just about running out of time here, and I know you also talk about the quantum universe in your book because you are a scientist and how it relates to changing our brains, beliefs, and lives in general. And listeners, you can find out much more about who you are and how powerful your brain is. How can people pick up your book, You Are the Placebo, Dr. Joe Dispenza?
I think the most common way people do it is just it's on Amazon. It's in Barnes and Noble website. Also, we have it on our website. It's on the Hay House website. But I would say Amazon probably is the best place. People have been pre-ordering it, and I'm certainly honored and humbled by the opportunity to contribute. So we have a new website called youaretheplacebo.com. There's a lot of content on there as well too that can instruct people a little bit more. So, but Amazon probably is the best place to order it.
All right, terrific. And of course, everybody, the show will be up and available for you to replay and download tomorrow. All the information about Dr. Joe Dispenza and his latest book, and also all the shows are available for podcasts on iTunes as well. So thank you so much, Dr. Dispenza, for being on the show today. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. You're amazing, and I appreciate everything you do for everybody out there.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for all the great work you do too, Michelle.
Mm, thank you. Blessings to you, and have fun at your you're doing a whole convention and sort of research information for folks too, huh?
Yeah, it's a research symposium about citizenship and integrity, yeah.
Beautiful. All right, take good care, and thanks again so much.
Okay. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Again, if you want to replay, download the show, it will be available on iTunes tomorrow. All the information for you. And, of course, here on the LA Talk Radio website, you can pick it up and listen to the show over and over again. And do check out the book, You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Matter, Dr. Joe Dispenza. And, of course, you will know him from the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, where he talks about creating your own reality. And it's all based on science. It really is. Neurology, neuroscience, brain function, and chemistry. I also want to thank my sponsor today's show. As always, we appreciate all of the wonderful help from Glow Soulwear. It's the clothing company that puts love and light in every stitch. Glow Soulwear is high-quality sports in nice casual clothing with beautiful and powerful sacred geometrical designs. That's what we call sacred G. Wear your vibration. Has a lot to do with about what we were talking on today, which was lighten up. When you put clothing on that is symbolizes really great feelings and makes you feel wonderful, wearing Sacred G, you'll just feel better. So check it out, glowsoulwear.com, glowsoulwear.com. Order yours today and just start feeling a little bit better. That's the way it goes here. All right, thank you so much for listening. Got a hard break coming up for CBS News. Find out what's going on in the world. All the great shows here on LA Talk Radio coming up. Country's most listened to internet talk radio station. Do take good care of yourself. We're going to find out next week about how to take care of yourself. when the kids leave the nest, when everybody goes away, or if you're on your own all of a sudden and you just kind of don't know what to do with yourself. Well, I've got some great tips for you and a wonderful author who's going to tell you. Take good care, and as I always say, do take care of yourself first, because that's the way it works in the world, don't you know? Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.